This is Betty Mae Jumper, you've been hearing about all day. She's demonstrating basket making over in the park, and I hope tomorrow afternoon y'all get a chance to go over and see her working. But she's also well known as a storyteller. Couple comments I want to make on the videotape to start with. It illustrates the importance of the role of women, especially in teaching and teaching cultural things like stories, and the role that they're taking in the modern Seminole life, teaching the kids, especially in Hollywood, who don't speak the language, aren't around the traditional life all the time. They're trying to formally teach that. And you notice they talked about the legends. They're starting to write down the legends so the kids will both learn the language and learn the stories. And then that final section was the story that she mentioned about how the rabbit brought fire to the people, which is a common type of Seminole story. Indian stories in general, and Susan covered some of this today, there are several types. One type is a myth, which, as you all know now, is sacred. Usually, it is usually set in the distant past or in a different world or an earlier world. The principal characters are usually gods or animals, and they usually deal with creation and origins of things. And then a second type is the trickster stories, which the rabbit is a common trickster figure. I heard you say on a tape we've got in our archive that the lying rabbit is the equivalent to Bugs Bunny today. It's the same. It's very common in black folklore also, and there's been a lot of mixing, particularly in the southeastern United States, between black and Indian lore, and that rabbit, trickster rabbit figure is a good example. Brer Rabbit is the same thing. It doesn't happen so much in other Indian cultures because they didn't have the influence of the blacks. And that's real important in Florida because before Florida was a state, a lot of runaway slaves came down here when they escaped, and a lot of them lived with the Seminole and worked with the Seminole, so there's been a lot of cultural interchange, and that shows up in the stories. I want Betty Mae to talk a little bit about how she learned stories and how stories work in Seminole culture in general. Now, you were born around Lake Okeechobee on the Brighton Reservation?
No, Indiantown.
Indiantown, okay, on the eastern side of Lake Okeechobee. But she moved to Hollywood when she was about 5. But since she was born in that near that reservation where the Creek language is spoken, she learned Creek, but her grandmother knew Miccosukee. So she knows both Indian languages. There are two languages spoken on the two reservations, which are not mutually understandable, but Betty Mae knows both of them. How did you learn these stories when you were growing up?
When in the Seminole family, the older people used to gather the young children, kids, and sit around a campfire, sometimes during the winter time, and they would have a big bonfire, and the older people sit and tell us all the stories. Or sometimes when we had big one chickies, and there's about 5 or 6 kids in one mosquito net, and my grandmother would lay on one mosquito net, and she would tell stories until we go to sleep. And sometimes it's a scary story if she wants us to hurry up and go to sleep. She tell that, and we all go to sleep. And this is the way I was taught.
Both men and women know the stories and tell them?
Most all the older people used to know. I have my great uncle used to tell the stories, too. We would be sitting at the... Sometimes when we get through eating, we would be sitting around at the table. And he would sit there and tell for hours on stories. And we would learn from him, too, also. Not only the stories they tell us how to live and how to get along in this world and how to plant, how to grow things. It is taught right there at the table sometimes with older people. And we learn from them at early age. When you reach 8 years old, they start teaching you Your mother teach you how to cook and sew. And the men take the boys out and teach them how to hunt. So at early age, we learn to survive in this world.
Are some of those lessons included in stories, like are stories, particular stories told to teach particular things?
A lot of things are taught through the stories, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you the reason why it's told this way, and tell you how the new world came into this, happened to be in this world.
Mm-hmm. How are stories told today, or are they? You said it used to be told around the campfire. Are they still told?
Well, some of the, like Susie now, the one that understand and talk Indian, she gather those and tell those kids. But mm-hmm. now that they go to school and mix with the white kids and all that, they lose in their language, and some of them just, you have to teach them in English.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stories now are told in English
mm-hmm.
because the kids don't understand. But that's part of what the cultural program is trying to do, both teach the language and teach the culture. Let's see. Now, you said there weren't, that you know of, special stories that were told at the Green Corn Dance or for any kind of festivals. There aren't special
stories. They just told most of them the same stories, but
uh-huh.
at the Green Corn Dance, they teach you how to live, and mm-hmm. they teach young girls how to dance and teach them how to cook and all that. That's what they teach. And become and teach the boys how to become leaders and how to be a good hunter.
Does everyone pretty much know basically about the Seminole, sort of their origins and where they are located now? Do I have to go over any of that?
I just wanted to ask how long you've had a written language that's been written down.
It's not written language. We never have written.
Because it looked like they were.
They've written it
They're doing it now.
Oh.
They
just
teach
in the last few years, I think.
Some of those people are writing as it sounds, and that's the way. Like Chiki, Chickee, that's the way they spell it now. It sounds Chiki, you know. That's a Chiki that the Seminole lives in, used to. They live in modern homes now, most of them, but older people still out there, and that's what they live. They just write it according to soft spoon, you know. A big old spoon that they used to have a soft key out on there, and they dip with that big spoon and soft key, that's the way they spell it. They put soft and then key on it, K-E on it, and that's the way they spell it.
They've only had to write it since they've deliberately tried to teach it to kids as a second language. So everybody knows all about the
They might not know significance of the Green Corn Dance.
I'm not sure I do.
Well, she does.
Yes. You want to talk a little bit about the Green Corn Dance for anyone who doesn't know?
The Green Corn Dance today is not as strict as it was back in my grandmother's, my mother's days. It was very strict, and you don't allow outsiders or any other only Seminoles can go. Only the tribe can go, and not unless they're very special people, like medicine men from the other tribe. Well, they invite them to go sometime. But this is the place where they all get together and dance and teach some young people how to dance and how to live. And sometimes this Green Corn Dance is once a year meeting, and everybody from all over the Florida state, wherever they may be, they know certain days. It's going to be when the green corn is done, ripe.
What time of year is that?
It's around July, first week in July, or last week in June. It's according to how the corn.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get together for 4 days and four nights out there. They clean their camps, and they live according to clans, snake clan, bird clan, panther, and all around. There's about 14 clans that live in this village. And after here, there's four medicine men sits out under that chickie in the middle by the big bonfire, and there's a long pole standing there where they play balls every evening, women against men, and the men can never touch the ball except that ball stick that they carry. And the women can pick it up and throw it. They think it's fair enough. And that's the way. And there's a man that stand on a bull, on there and scrape that pole, and he got charcoal, and he mocked it. A woman down below, man on top, and whoever gets the 10 point first is the winner. And that's the way they play. Girls and women plays against men and boys. And they dance first 3 nights or so until middle of the night. And one day they fast. And on that day they had a big meeting. And some of this punishment goes on this. There's some severe punishment sometimes. The people, clans, bring the person that did some real bad things, they bring it to these militias, and whatever they decided, they different clans that sit out there, so whichever that belong to that clan, they go and pass the sentence on them. Sometimes they kill a person if they think that they should be put to death, whatever, he killed a person, somebody else, or something he did very much against the tribal regulation, that's what they did, they killed. Sometimes they cut their ears. And sometimes they split their tongue. And sometimes they tie to the tree and let him sit out there, or her sit out there all day long for 4 days and 4 nights. And if he survived, well, that's he's free. Or they whip them and tie him to the tree. And sometimes if it's a younger kids, they scratch them on their arms. And then on a good part, some of them will in marriages. If I like your son, if you like my daughter, and your son likes her, you come and talk to me, and we decide they get married. That's where they get married. And then you decide you like somebody's daughter, and you want your son to marry that girl. Well, you ask for it, and then they agree, and if she's not promised. Sometimes the parents promise children when they're born, and they get married when they get to be a certain age. And so... Then the last, after they fast all that day and they have all that meeting all that day, they dance the last night all night long. And on the early in the morning, they had this big pot of that black drink, they call it, but it's a roots that they mix it up and it boils for 4 days. And on the last day, they start using that. And they just put it all of themselves and they drink it. Then they get, the men get scratched on the arms, on the legs, on the back, on the front. Sometimes women just want to get scratched on their arm, they can do it. This is what they believe in, purifying the blood, the old, done away with old blood and start a new year. And then they go, they have a river or canal or pond near it, and that's where they go swimming, and they wash all the old blood off, and the new blood comes in. And then they come back and eat this, they get this green corn. The medicine man will be standing there and get those corn after it boiled it and pass it to them, and they eat it, and they get that corn and rub it all themselves. And this is the thank the great spirit that they had a good year, and this is the way they end it. And everybody goes home until the next year again. This was the green corn dance.
Mm-hmm. That black drink, is that... By drinking that, is that a purification of some type?
That's what they believed in.
Does it make them throw up?
Sometimes.
That's what I heard. Do you know what it is?
It's mixed with all different roots that they get them. I don't know the roots. I mean, I'm not that. But they have a... There's a sawgrass. It's not the one that cuts your hand. There's not a different kind. And it's, I don't know the name of it. I don't know what you would call it. If you know... I don't know. There's my mother showed, huh?
I thought it was yopon.
Whatever it is, it grows out in Everglades, and that's what they get the roots out, and that's what they, and then about three or more others they mixed up with, and it balls. It started with a little bit, and keep adding until fourth morning, and they uses it.
And Betty Mae, don't they there too, on a certain night, they do the scratching ceremony. With the boys who are coming of age, don't they?
Yeah,
do
and
that?
They name them. They name them. They got second name. When they become an age, about 12, 13, 14 years old, whatever their parents think they age now to become a man, when they become a teenager, that's when they got scratch and they get new name. Just the boys, not the...
And they have to drink the black drink.
Cherokee communities, the young children have a plan, but anyway, they have a special relationship with, say, a squirrel or a fox or whatever, depending on what clan they're in. Is that true in the Seminole?
The clan, yeah, you belong to the clan.
They can't hurt that animal.
They can't marry within a clan. If I belong to a bird clan, and he's a bird, I cannot marry him. He has to be another clan, from like panther or something else.
And
even the animal in nature, isn't there? Do you have a certain protective feeling towards that animal?
Whatever you belong to the clan, that's what you.
But some of the clan, one of the clans is the wind. They're not all animals.
No, yeah, there's a wind, and there's a. There used to be a wild potato clan, but they're gone now. They're the last clan. See, the clan goes by the mother. Mm-hmm. It will not go with the father. The father has his own clan. Long time ago, we used to, like my brother, would punish my kids. The father cannot punish it. It need a whipping. That would be my brother's job to do that. And my husband's job to whip his own sister's kids and all that. That's the way it went. If my son did something wrong, I just took him to my brother and he'll punish him, whip him or whatever need to be done. That's the way it went. And they were very strict and they were very scared. Today, I wish that punishment was still there, because now they're getting away on the drugs and everything else like everybody else today. That's what I told a lot of them, that you should live back in my days. I said, you'll be whipped and everything else. Now they yell, whatever they're calling it.
Don't pay anything.
The child abuse or whatever you want to call it. And policemen will be down on you. One of the ladies went and whipped her daughter because she did something wrong. She needed whipping. And somebody ran and told the police, and they came and picked her up. She said, I'll whip my kids until I die. She told them, they can't do nothing to her. He said, if she do wrong, and I think she do wrong, I'll whip her. Seminole has real strict belief in whipping them.
Does anyone have any questions before we get to some stories?
No, it's just a tradition. It's just to go with a tribe. They used to have long hair and tie it up on top. And they got cardboard or a shape of made out of, and they covered it with their hair. And this is what they keep their shade over their eyes, and when they out in the hot sun like it was today, they keep the shade over on the Seminoles, and that's the way they work. And the long dress keeps from going through sour gas, cut them off. The cape, they keep their hand underneath like that. Keep from mosquitoes biting them, that's all. And they have a lot of beads around their neck. A lot of people think it's every year you put on a string. It isn't, so it just go with a costume.
And where did these beads come from?
Well, they start trading with traders when they start coming in. Long before that, a lot of trade in on a food. My grandmother told me that the first beads that she ever heard from her grandmother was when the people came to this land. They taught them how to give them corn and things like that, and white people appreciated that they would give them trinkets like beads and stuff, and that's where it came from. Because they can't make beads except they make shells or mm-hmm. eat a seed. That's what they made beads out of.
Okay, well, I'd like to ask you to tell maybe one or two stories that sort of deal with the origins of things, say how the earth was formed. Do you know any stories like that? About
not really. From the Bibles I do, but not.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you know stories with animals.
That's stories from the animals and stories from different things, but... They just know. They, before that, like I said, thank God. I mean, thank Great Spirit for good year. That's the way they believe, and they thought they know that Great Spirit made a. They call it a breath giver. That's the way they call God. Breath giver is the one that made the land. Mm-hmm. He made the earth, and he was in this world and did all these things. They believe in that's the way they told their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or Great Spirit, they call it.
Okay. Well, how about a story about the rabbit?
I will tell you a story about a rabbit and an alligator. Once I was doing days when everything understand each other. They talk the same language. There's one language, and everything crawling, flying, everything understood each other. So one day they're having this big festival or dance or whatever, they get together. And so the rabbit was there, and he saw a lot of things being done. And being a rabbit, he can't do this. A lot of things. People he see them do. So one day he decided he would kill an alligator. So he went down on a river singing away, passing there, and there was old alligator laying on a bank, sleeping away in a hot sun with his mouth open. And he was saying, you know, and he said, "Hey, gator." He didn't answer. He said, "Hey, alligator, I'm talking to you." And the alligator finally waked up, and he says, "Go away." He said, "I don't want to see you." He said, "Go away." And the alligator says, "What are you doing on this bank anyway? You're supposed to be where everybody's gathering." He said, "Why are you out here?" He said, "Well, I just came to walk." He said, "I saw a real beautiful thing on the other side of my hill over there, and I want you to name it. See what that is." And the alligator, the rabbit said, "Come on, go with me." He said, "Oh, no." He says, I'm too tired. I don't want to sleep." He says, "No." He says, "Just a little ways. You can go with me and go." So he said, "All right." He agreed. And so they was going down the road, and before they get to the hill, he went and got a stick, and he started beating on him. Beat him as hard as he could beat him, on the head, on the back, and everywhere. He hit him and hit him and hit him until the alligator ran back and went to the canal, back in that water. And so the rabbit went home real angry. So the next day he was walking around, and he saw a squirrel up in a tree hunting nuts. And he had a big old fluffy tail. And the rabbit decided he would borrow that jacket. So he says, "Squirrel, come down here." He says, "I'm too busy saving my nuts for winter." He says, "Come down here." He says, "I just want to talk to you." So the squirrel came down, and he was talking to him, and the rabbit said, "How about loaning your jacket to me one day? I want to wear it down the road and show it off and let people think I'm a squirrel." He says, "No." He says, "I just don't feel like loaning my clothes to nobody." He said, "Oh, come on." He says, "Come on, loan me your clothes." So he finally went out, and he loaned him his jacket, and he went down the road singing like a squirrel. He finally came up where the alligator was, and here he was again sleeping on a bank under the hot sun. And so he was singing in a squirrel song. He said, "What are you doing?" He says, "People like you all get on my nerve." He says, "Get away from here." He says, "Who got on your nerve?" He says, "Oh, that old rabbit, he whipped me." He says, "Why did he whip you?" He says, "I don't know why he whipped me. He thought he would kill me, I guess." And that squirrel says, "Well, how do they kill you?" And the rabbit and the alligator, crazy as he is, he don't have no sense. So he says, "Well, you have to hit my back, and then I can't move. Then you have to hit my head. Then that's what kills me." "Oh, is that right?" the squirrel said. And he was singing away, and he says, "Why don't we go see my cousin over here?" He says, "My cousin lives over here, and he And he liked to see you. He said he wants to know what you look like. I said, oh, that's the way people get me out of here and start beating on me. But he just kept at it until the alligator finally gave up. And so he followed him, and they was going down the road. And he found a big stick that was laying down there, good enough to hurt him. So he went and picked it up and hit him on the back, and the alligator can't move no more. So he went and hit top of the head, and he pounded until the alligator died. And so the rabbit went out, and this is the way you kill alligator if you want to kill alligator.
Better remember that.
And then I'll tell you about the two crows. There were once a big forest, and it was a beautiful forest. It has all kinds of flowers, all kinds of everything. Everything was beautiful. And all these birds lives in there, and they sing and enjoy themselves. And there was two most beautiful birds. They had the most beautiful colors you ever seen. Nobody can't mess up to them. And when they sing, they out of this world. They can sing where everybody can sit there, and you can't even hear anything drop. Even you just enjoy them. And they used to be so proud that they would stand there and sing away to the people and to the other animals and birds. All the animals used to sit there and listen to them. So one day, they was out flying around above this forest, and they saw a black thing coming up way at the distance. And one of them said, oh, come on, let's go see this thing that's coming up. What is that? And they said, oh, it must be, one of them said, it must be danger, or might be danger. He said, let's don't go. But the older bird kept at it until the other one gave in. They fly about half of the way, and sat on a tree and watched it for a long time. And he says, come on, let's go to the next tree. He kept at it and kept at it until the other one agreed, and they went to the next tree. So they sat there and watched it for a long time. And the red fire comes up, and the smoke goes up. But they didn't know what it was because they never seen it before. And they see that yellow thing that's going up. And one of them said, I wonder how that yellow thing feels. And they said, the other one said, I'd be too scared to go out near it. So they kept sitting for a while. And they said, one of them said, that tree near it, he said, we can look down at it and look down at it and see what it's like. And we could see that black thing that's going up there. And so finally the other one gave in. And they flew up there. And when they got on that black pine tree, the branches was already burnt, and when they sit on that branch, it broke down, and they went in that black shut, and they all black as what you see a crow today, and they fly up in the tree, and they try to wash those things off, but they can't get nothing off. And when they try to sing, they can't sing. Only thing that could come out was caw, caw, caw. And so today you see them out in Everglades. They seem to come back to the beautiful forest, so they go from on sawgrass to sawgrass, hunting food, living out there, those black crows.
Okay. Got any more?
You said two.
I did? This is your show. I'm just introducing you. Do you know any stories that have people in them?
No,
or people and animals.
Well, just mostly animals and
there's,
all that.
There's the one where the rabbit brought the fire that was told there.
That's a long, long story. I'm writing these stories, and I'm writing a book, and it'll come out into this sometimes before Christmas. I got one book out, How the Williamsons Came Into the Tribe. I finished that last year.
And where could we buy it?
I'm going to send it to you. Seminole Tribune, they through them.
Mm-hmm. And Betty May, how about the rabbit and the snake?
All right. There was a there was a lot of people were sitting there, the Indian men's and animals, and they were talking to each other about of different things. And was sitting there, quite a bit of people was out there, and there was a lot of animals having a meeting of some kind. And this rabbit, he always think that he could show off doing something. So he came in and he said, "I bet you I can bring a rat out of a snake." I said, "Oh, go away with it, it'll eat you up." But he just kept pestering people and said, "I think I can bring a rattlesnake, but you all can't do it." He says, "I can pick up the rattlesnake and bring it in." "Oh, I can bring the rattlesnake." All people finally got tired, and they said, "All right." He says, "You bring the rattlesnake and we'll see that." And they all ha, 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 laughing at him. And so Rabbit got himself a tow sack and big old string and tied up. And away he went. And he was looking around for a long time, and almost edge of the forest, there sit the old rattlesnake all crawled up. And he came up on him and he says, "Hello, snake." And that old rabbit went and got a string and tied around his neck and choked it and threw it in the tow sack. And he sang away, went back to that camp. And where everybody was, and he went out and laid that old snake out in front of everybody to get out of the tow sack and laid out in front of everybody. And he said, "I said I would bring this rattlesnake," and sure enough, there was that big diamond rattlesnake laying out there. And when he got a string over there, he said, "Yeah," he said, "he told a lie to me. He said, you all said that I was shorter than this string, and he choked me and brought me in. That's why he brought me in." So that's another time he did.
Did you say something in the Seminole language? Can you speak there?
What do you want me to say?
Oh, Betty Mae, why don't you sing?
Sing.
I usually do that for the kids.
Good, these are kids.
Well, when I go talk to the school, I usually sing two songs. One is in Miccosukee and one is in Creek. That way you know the difference in Creek. Mm-hmm. And the first one is going to be a Creek. Jesus, I no kiji, chuka na kuncha kiji, ho puita ki ina ki, yik cha kiji, in yik jis. Achano kichis, achano kichis, achano kichis, nakchuka chakichis. That's in Creek language. And the other one's going to be in Miccosukee, and it's never written. They have these songs, and they just sing from memories from the others. On Jesus can ta api heki. Onti chas kanta pi hai ki, onti chas kanta pi hai ki, monti okla kanton, ingu sa pasot monto ni tiwa, ingu sa pasot monto ni tiwa, ingu sa pasot monto no tiwa, monti okla kanton. That's in Miccosukee. That's a Christian song. That's a religious song that they sing.
Now, not many people know both those languages, is that right?
No, that Minnie, she can't understand me if I talk in Creek to her. Mm-hmm. The lady that's with me, I have to talk in Miccosukee to her.
Does she understand English?
A little bit, a few words.
Mm-hmm. Is the little boy hers?
You go to school.
What do the songs you just said mean? What story do they tell?
The song that I just sang?
Yeah.
He says, "Come on, Christian, come on. Come on to heaven where God is. We'll meet there all together and we're all going to heaven. So come on, people." He says, "Come and follow me." He says, "I'm going to heaven."
And then the other one, of course,
Jesus loves me.
We all know Jesus loves me.
do you know who first put those hymns into the Indian language?
Well, there's a Creek songs. It's written Creek songs, mm-hmm. and the it's interpreted to Miccosukee. We get it from Creek language, Creek song.
Oh, I see. So it went from Creek to Miccosukee.
Uh-huh. But they haven't done to Jesus.
Was it ever in English? That second song you sung.
No, it's always in Creek songs. They have Creek book. It's written,
mm-hmm.
and when they sing that, some people interpret to Miccosukee in same language and same tune.
Hmm. Now you went to the Indian school in Cherokee, right in North Carolina. There was no Indian school in Florida, and a number of Indians in the when was that in the 50s, 40s,
19, back in
1940s, went to the Indian school.
In the Florida state, we cannot go to school because we were the Indians. The door was closed to them, closed for us. And there was no Indian school. And we was in black or we was in white, so we can't go in no school. So when I was about 13 or 14, I decided I don't want to go to school because I have friends among the white kids that go to school, and I want to go to school and get on a bus. I thought it was fun to ride the bus to school. And so this is the reason I asked my mother and my mother go to the superintendent, the agency, and they said, yeah, we'll get you in school when they ask. They said, we can't go to school there. So the superintendent went and said, within 2-3 weeks, he said, I'll get you in school. But that was around September. And about in January, they said that we could go to school at Cherokee, that's in North Carolina, in a boarding school, a government boarding school, or either go to Oklahoma in a boarding school. So I decided I wanted to learn how to speak English. I didn't know it too much. I still don't, but I make enough to understand. Well, anyway, I decided if I go to Cherokee, I can understand Cherokee language. If I go to Oklahoma, there's Seminoles that I will blab it out in the Creek to them, and so I can't learn. So I decided to go to Cherokee. So my cousin and I and my brother, we went to Cherokee Indian School. I stayed there 8.5 years and graduated from high school. My cousin quit, and my brother went into Marines, but I stayed in. And I was one of the first Seminole to graduate. By the time I got out, there was about 21 students going to Cherokee School when we got out. Then when we came back in 1943, around now, we start fighting until we have the doors open in Danish School, and that's when around 45, the kids start going to school there.
You were the first Indian Seminole Indian girl to go to high school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one was a boy who graduated about 2 years later. And that's where our school, beginning of our school started.
Betty Mae, tell them about Frank and Lottie's son, Jim, the lawyer.
Oh, yeah. When he was very young, he went to high school, very smart boy. But then he had a car accident and lost one of his eyes. Then he had another one and lost both of his eyes. And then when he lost his eyes and found out that he could never see again, people talked to him about going to school and learn how to work for himself. At first, he kind of hated it and was against it. You know, how you get blind, how would you feel? That's the way he felt. But then he decided he could go to school. He went to the college. And now we have a best lawyer in and he's a blind, but he's real good. He's a good lawyer. He's lawyer for the tribe.
Yeah, he went to, I know he came to Madison and was in the junior college there, but then he went to the school for the blind at St. Augustine, didn't he? And then he went to Stetson Law School, did he?
He went as high as he could go. And he's real good.
He's a
smart
graduate of Stetson Law School.
And he's a tribal lawyer now.
Yes.
And what year did he go to Madison?
Well, It was probably in the 60s. Because they used to stop by and visit with me when I lived here in Mighty Plains.
Anybody else have any questions or requests for stories?
Anybody over there?
Yeah?
Long
time ago, did you have
certain
signs in the weather?
We didn't have no radios, or they didn't have no, but some way the men find out that there's a hurricane come, and through that they either drop one of the biggest chickie down and get under there, or they go to the highest hammock and get under those. Tie these logs under the thing and get under them or in those hollow trees, and that's the way they survive. Back in 1926, hurricane, my mother said that they tied, a lot of people died on the other side of that lake. Mm-hmm. But on this side, my mother said my great uncle and them went and chopped this palm, cabbage palm tree, and tie them together and put canvas on top and tie it to the trees, two, three trees, like oak trees, big oak trees. They know that they can't move there, so they tie them. And that's where they sit and float until the water went down and covered the canvas, and they went under there. That's the way my mother said they survived through that 26. And none of the Indians died during the 1926 hurricane, but there's a lot of white and a lot of color.
Interestingly enough, we have, I feel sorry for you people who've never been to the Florida Folk Festival because you don't know what you're missing. But we have a genius, a writer, who wrote a song about Lake Okeechobee and the terrible hurricane that blew all the water out of the lake and drowned thousands of people. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're...
Yeah. Sure. Aren't there stories that the Indians knew it was coming?
My mother, when I was a little girl, my mother showed me I seen it. But to this day, I can't tell you this, you could see it. One day the wind was blowing like, and I was just a kid, about 7 years old, 8 years old. She said, I think the hurricane is coming on us. And he says, we're going out there and we're going to watch. And if we see this bird come by, we know how strong it is and we know where we're going. Mm-hmm. And we have a big rock pit out there. And if it's going to be, we have a frame house that's pretty strong that they made. And it's small, but it's stood the hurricanes before. But my mother don't trust it if she knows it's going to be strong. We go to the rock pit. There's a hole that they cave like that. Whichever hurricane's going to come, that's the way we're going to sit against the rock, rock pit. And one day we went out there, and they was watching it. And all day they watched for this bird. There's a big old bird with a big wing, and the tail has a fork like that. Mm-hmm. And he flies slow in front of this toward coming that way from the hurricane. Mm-hmm. It flies real low. It means it's going to be real strong. And if you see real high, it means that it's not going to be strong. Mm-hmm. So my mother said, see, that bird that's coming? He said, it means that it's going to be low. He says, we going into that rock pit. Mm-hmm. And so we did. When we went down in that rock pit, and she put canvas on, and all of us went down there, my grand uncle, and all of us went down in there. And sure enough, it knocks a lot of trees down and one hit one side of our house, and it broke the windows and all that. But we were safe down there, and, mm-hmm. and I seen that bird, but I couldn't say that you all could see it or anything. I don't know how.
Yeah.
But that bird tells them that they that's the way they learned. Mama did, my family did, too, that way.
Yeah.
Talk a lot about the Seminoles and things like
haven't read it.
I just wondered what you would think of this, a white person talking about.
There's a lot of truth in some, a lot of books I have read. Some, a lot of books, somebody brings it to me and asks me what is true or not. And some of them, it is true, and some of them, some parts it's not true. Some of them is makeup.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it. So I don't know. I haven't read them.
Loretta?
Do you have any stories, Ms. Jumper, about the Seminoles turning hurricane?
Turning hurricane? Mm-hmm. I just didn't say that because I don't know whether it's true or not, you know. And that before we went in that rock pit, my great uncle, he was an Jimmy Gopher was his name, and he was an old man. He was a medicine leader one time, and he carried a bundle that they called a carried a bundle, and he was the top man of this Green Cornets. And he always medicine man, and he was... So when he was standing there, he said that we'll be protected if I do this, and it will turn and go out that way. And we'll just get the edge of it. And so he went and stand out there, and he got a big old axe, and he sang as he digged that hole and put the axe and facing toward the hurricane, and he said that will turn him and it will go this way, and that's a lot of beliefs like that they had. So I don't know, God,
if it works.
But he said we'll be safe, and we were safe, and when and we just got the edge of it, the middle went out on the ocean.
Can't argue with success.
So I don't know what it's right, truth to it. I don't know. I can't say, you know.
Betty May,
that's to believe
the boys now being trained as medicine men.
Few of them. James Billy is one of them, you know, mm-hmm. our chairman. He's yeah. one of them is learning. Mm-hmm. He was under that Ingham Billy, they call it, one of the famous medicine
mm-hmm.
man.
Yeah.
He was under there for a while before he died, and so he knows quite a bit, I guess. And at his age, by full fire, I'm learning all those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly appreciated his presence at the folk festival this year and what he did.
Oh, James, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He's a character.
Yeah, he's done a lot for the
yeah.
tribe.
He has.
Yeah, you had another question.
Well, the other question was if she had time to tell another story. She had mentioned sometimes the mothers or the grandmothers would tell kids these scary stories.
Right. The thunder going outside.
It's
a perfect
time. It's not real stories. It just tell you ghost story, like, you know.
That's what I'd sort of like to know, like, what would be a scary story?
sometimes when it's rainy season and it's thundering and like this black cloud come over here, and if it's real rainy and then dark, real dark, and he said, and you know how your kids all act up and goof around and play around. The grandmother would say, he says, it's real dark tonight. He says, and look at that lightning going out. He says, you might see a person standing out there, he said, with a figure. And he said, he will have big old eyes at you. And he said, he's going to get you if you don't go to behave yourself, et cetera. And then he would say, underneath, we live in cities on a platform, you know. He says, underneath, he says, there's a thumb crawling around with a hand cut off on her wrist, and it's crawling around. When he comes out, he's going to poke you, and he said, you're going to die. Things like that, and it's scary at night.
I'm scared right now. By the way, during the festival, a couple of chickees were built, and they're still up. We're supposed to take them down, but they're across from the food shelter, and if you walk out that way tomorrow, if you have a chance, you might go look at them.
That platform by
platform. There's a cooking chickee, and then there's a sleeping chickee, which has a platform in it.
And he did a very nice thing. They put up the framework and then thatched the roofs with mm-hmm. palm fronds that they brought all the way from South Florida because it has
in
to be
a U-Haul truck.
Frond, mm-hmm. and showed how the roofs were thatched. And the roof is always, the eaves of the chicky are broad and hang down so that it cuts the bad weather. It has to be a real bad storm, doesn't it,
mm-hmm.
for the storm to get into the chicky.
They put it on, you know, wheel down.
You
never get wet or anything. That houses last about 5 years.
How about talking about the influence or the owl's place in Indian lore?
Owl's place.
The owl.
Owl?
The bird, the owl.
What was it, your question?
Well, I wondered if you know some of the superstitions.
The Indians are. We're superstitious from the owls. They think that if they hoot around your place, or a lot of times they, you know, sit up in a tree and hoot. They think that they believe that maybe your kinfolk's going to die or going to get very sick. It warning you that something bad is coming up. Hear that and. And they think that he's kind of spirit-like, and they're scared of him. If you hear the owls sing through the night, they go get the Indian medicine man, and he does medicine. They throw it all around the yard.
Is there any way to? Well, the medicine man, of course, could stop him.
That's what I believe.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have superstitions too about the owl, especially the screech owl. That's the little bitty one.
Oh yeah.
And if you hear him, somebody in your family will die. And the way to break the spell is to turn your shoes upside down, or tie a knot in the corner of your sheet and choke him to death.
Yeah, a lot of superstitious things.
Yeah?
I heard a story about somebody who lived in Big Cypress. You were talking about living in the Chickies. This one had to do with a fellow who came home from a business trip and was living in some of the new houses. Have you heard that one?
No.
No? Okay, because I'm not sure you'd call it a story, but 3 or 4 people told it about this one guy. And he never did it. It was one.
Well, why don't you tell it?
Why don't you tell it on? Now you got us waiting.
Well, I don't remember it.
Oh.
Did somebody else? Yeah.
You mentioned soft keys. The Indians still eat that?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Is that made from the kunti?
Corn. Kunti, yeah, that's Compton. Kunti, they do that. But they don't find them so much no more. It's all chopped down and all these houses coming up. You can't find them no more. But this corn, you porch it like popcorn, but before it pops, you know how it is. And it's real corn. And then they get this a log, and they have a hole in it. And they put it all in there, and they got a big old stick that has a round thing, and they pound it and pound it and pound it until they grind it like, and then they get divided in 2 or 3 ways, you know, and they make softy out of that. First, they used to have a tree that they burned. I don't know the name of it. I know what it is in Indian, but they burned that. And then they get that up and put it in the water and get the juice out of it. And you put maybe half a cupful in that to have a flavor in it, and that's the way to drink. But today they put sodas in it, two tablespoons full of soda, and it makes the same flavor. So that's the way they drink it. It's
and
a softy.
No salt.
No salt.
Nothing, really.
You can grow the kunti.
Huh?
You can grow it. The kunti can be grown.
I know it. I've seen it at her place over there. Was it your place that you have kunti? You? Yeah. No?
No, I don't plant. It's a root. They use the root. Is the root cone shaped on this?
Yeah, it's a round thing. Somebody has a... I went to one of the places down here below Orlando, and they have it all planted out in the yard, some kind of a Ford.
How did they used to? They used to use it to make flour with, right? To
well, they grind it. I mean, they got a hole on this, like a you rake. I mean, what do you do it with a carrots?
Yeah,
grated. Yeah, grated. They have a big grater, but like this, and the women was stand there and got all these roots and grated and grated and grated until a big old pile, and they put it out in a little platform. They put palmetto leaves all under it, and then they put cloth underneath, and they put it all out there for 3 weeks, and it. I don't know. It just—I don't know how you explain it, but it's—it finally gets to the, and then they get this and they put it in a. They have a four poles and they have this white linen or white cloth, and they put it in there and they do that and put water until it drains through, and they take this things that's the thing that's left, and they throw it away, and then. Then they take this thing again and they put it into another clean thing and they do it again and wash it out until again. And there's two parts to it. That one is orange-like, yellow-like, and the other is real white. And you want it real white, the more you wash it, and you put this red thing on top, get it and put it in another one, and you keep washing that, but it stay red. But you wash this until it real white and keep putting it through until real white. And then you put it out in a platform and let the sun dry and keep it out there until maybe 2-3 days until it dries like a flower. And then you make a dough like, you know, make it like a hot cake or whatever you want to call it, but there's no salt in it, you know, just plain. But then you make soft your oven. It's like a starch, but it's that plant. And they make like a dumplings in it, and they drink that. If you raise me, you like it. You love it.
It's like a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but they came from. I know the only one that does that is one lady out on the trail, and she find it along the gulf somewhere.
It's hard to find anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're planting it in state parks. You can find it in front of some buildings and stuff.
And that's what I did. I saw some of these buildings off.
Kunti, is that what it is?
Kunti plant. Kunti, that's what the Seminole call it. And people, they used to have a place somewhere in Florida where they used to make flowers out of it, I understood, and a long time ago. And they learned how to say Kunti from Indians, and they call it Kunti plant, but it's a Kumpti. They call it Kumpti in English.
They're using it now. A lot of some people are into landscaping Florida with native plants, and they use it in landscaping.
It's a root, big old root down there, and it's a big old green leaves like that. And it makes a beautiful plant.
Anybody else want to ask anything?
Going back to the owl, Ben May, did you know the young woman who came to Big Cypress to teach in Oklahoma that had the experience with the owl?
No.
She lived alone in a trailer out on Big Cypress, and it's a very kind of desolate area. And one night she was sitting in her living room, and she heard an owl. And she told herself, her father had told her the story about the owls all of her life, and she's, you know, she was one of the modern kids that didn't believe anything that her papa had to say. And so she didn't pay much attention to it that night. And the next night, it landed on a limb just outside of her trailer door. Well, that night, she got a little more excited about it. And the third night, it came and attached itself to her screen door. And by the fifth day, she had gone back to Oklahoma.
I don't know if you want to comment on this or not, because there was a question.
killed the panther.
That's our chairman, James Billy.
That's James Billy.
Yeah. They dropped it.
Yeah, I know right. I know they did. But what I was wondering is, they mentioned in the newspaper something about the reason he did it was because it was part of a Seminole practice that the paw had medicinal purposes, something like that. Is there a story about
that? The way he killed it was he was out riding. A lot of our young people rides horses. He came upon this panther, and he could either run from it and let him chase him, or he could kill him. Mm-hmm. The panther's not going to let you go when he's right up on you looking at you. And so he decided he was going to kill it, and he killed it. And he brought it home, and the Indians eat them. And when you kill a panther, you done something that nobody else does. And it's kind of, you're proud of it. And so that's what he did. He was real proud that he killed it. So he brought it back, and all the young people decided to get a taste of it and see what it tastes like. But Indian medicine, they get parts of some of the things to use in their medicine pouch that they carry. So they got all that, and people all got that. And so they didn't think of nothing, and they cooked it out there and ate it. And he was going to keep that skin that he did, so he could show people how he killed the panther. And he had it up there, and just like anybody else, somebody didn't like him, so he went and called a game warden on him, and that's when he came and they picked him up. That's the way it started. Mm-hmm. But it's when the Braves kills a panther, it's they brags about it, because not many of them find a panther to kill, and that's. So he thought he'd done something big and kind of got and he did.
Are there any stories with panthers in them at all or not?
No, that's...
No?
That was sure a good one.
That was a good one, yeah.
Not a heaven. But they respect panthers. They,
I'd say.
It's they're scared of it. They think he's kind of a spirit-like thing.
Mm-hmm.
Betty May, I think it was either Billy Bowles or probably Frank Shore, because he talks a little more than Billy did. But I think Mr. Barnes said that it is a tradition amongst the Seminoles to have great respect for snakes. And the saying is, no see 'em, no hurt 'em. And they don't kill snakes. They
think that if you play around and joke around a snake, he doesn't like to be teased. A snake don't, and he don't like jokes. So that's the way the Indian believes. And if you joke about him, he will hurt you. And so, if you ever ask something and you see rattlesnake, even they start.
Did you make your story?
Not this one. I'll make them, but not. Well, the Indians sell to each other, you know. A lot of them, that's their bread and butter, some of them.
And is this one of the art forms that they would start learning at 8?
No,
they would
just simple things.
Okay, but this is all part of the life.
Yeah, this is when you... expert when you make these
complicated. Along with Betty May, who's demonstrating the baskets, there's another woman over there who is doing patchwork, if you want to go watch that, over in the interpretive building, either during lunch break, or we're going to try and get Barbara to talk you into staying maybe till 4:30, because they're not done till about 3:30, so you can go over and talk to her tomorrow.
Are most Seminoles Christian?
Yes, now they are. Most of them belong to Baptist churches. That's why I said I wrote that book, how God's Word came into a trial. In the beginning, they didn't have no Bible, and they didn't have anything. They always thought the Bible was a white people's book, that it didn't belong to the Indians.
I'm glad you did that. I certainly want to know.
Anyone else want to ask anything?
You gave an example of a young man in the tribe who became educated as a lawyer and returned to the reservation to practice. What are many of the other young people doing as they're becoming better educated?
We got a lot of them that's coming back, become secretaries, nurses, or they're working a lot of accounting. Like my son, he went finished school and came back, and he's a director of recreation on three reservations. He directs all of them and bring ball games and all different things in. Take them kids out through summer. Now they're entertaining their young people. Take them to swimming, roller skate, or take them out, show them outside, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, like my son, he came back. He's accounting in a tribal accounting. And a lot of young ladies works in clerks, you know, in the tribal clerks, or some of them works out on farms. One man is running a farm out there because he learned how to teach the others how to farm.
And some of them are prosperous cattlemen.
Yeah, and we have cattle. We got a beef cattle that we raise out there. Mm-hmm. The individual has beef cattle, and every year they sell it around in August. Now we got catfish farm that they raise catfish and send it to sell it to the outside. They got pig farm. And so.
More of the young people are returning to the reservations than.
Most of them returning. Hardly any out there. Just very few that's. They go away, but they come back. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Do you know another young man by the name of Max Osceola?
That's my nephew. That's my nephew.
What is he doing now? We knew him when he was a child.
Max Osceola Jr., you're talking about?
Right.
He's a councilman now. I got a paper that tells about how he become a councilman. He's one of the representatives of the reservations.
When we were camping down there one time, our children were playing with him and his little friends, and they were playing cowboy and Indians, and our boys were the Indians.
Corey is dead.
Yeah, but was he related to you?
No.
My parents lived in Miami in 1926, and you were talking about that hurricane. And before that, Corey Osceola used to come poling his boat up the Miami River and stop by and have a cup of coffee.
I know his sons and his daughters.
Anyone else? I think we're about worn Betty Mae out.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to come up and talk to her later, or especially go over and see her tomorrow while she's
tomorrow
working.
Morning, is that?
She'll be working all day. You start at 9?
9 till 4.
Till 4. We're going to talk her into 4:30 maybe, so you who are going to be in the sessions can go over. And she'll be here all the rest of this week too if you live nearby or want to tell anybody else about it. Okay, well thank you all. Oh.